Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this Air France message. With Air France, your journey to France begins when you set foot on the plane, starting with a complimentary glass of champagne in every class. And in business and la première, savor a five-course meal with cheese and wine and unique menus created by some of the greatest French chefs. Enjoy a taste of France before you arrive. Bon appétit. Elegance is a journey. Air France.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This is North South.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, North and South Podcast with my co-host in Los Angeles Times, own Dylan Hernandez, whose mic setting was blowing my ears out before we started. So hopefully we've modulated Dylan. You do not want Dylan blowing your eardrums out. I can guarantee you this. At least if you've had like an extra cup of coffee. Good morning, Dylan. Are we modulated here?
I hope so, because I'm very caffeinated, so I'm going to be loud today.
You were blasting. It was like I was at a friggin' Nirvana concert from 1991 or something. It was blowing my ears out in Seattle in the hardcore days. All right.
You're getting kind of older, so
That's true.
Talk out a little bit loud.
Yeah. Huh? What were you saying? All good. Speaking of oldies but goodies. We got Lakers and Warriors. I was just looked at the standings. The Lakers are the number 2 seed currently in the West, which is amazing. And the Warriors are 6. Like, this just happened in a flash. They were like going to be like 9-11 there for a while, and now they're 2-6, both moving up with a bullet. I don't know. I mean, the Lakers can't get to 1. The OKC is way out ahead, but they're establishing themselves as the 2. And the Warriors very much want to get to 6 because you get out of the play-in and they're at 6. They've got a bunch of teams right behind them, but they might catch 5. They might catch Houston at 5. This is remarkable. Dylan, I'll just throw it out there. Are both of these teams or one of them separately real championship contenders? Are we looking at potential championship teams with the Warriors and Lakers?
I mean, I just think that just because of the stars that they have, yeah, you're right. It's a star-driven league. Steph is still Steph, right? You had Butler in there, who's that kind of proven winner. I think that they have a shot from that standpoint. And just from what I've seen from the Lakers, right? Obviously, that's the team I've seen more, so I've kind of focused more there. But, you know, really, this has started for the Lakers, you know, back in like mid-January. Mm-hmm. And if you kind of look at it, right, I mean, they had Anthony Davis at the start of that period, right, coming out of the fires. So, you know, this stretch that they've been on here, right, and I think since mid-January they have the highest rated defense in the league. This has happened with Anthony Davis, obviously without, right, with Anthony Davis hurt, with Anthony Davis traded away. This has happened with LeBron James in the lineup, you know, in a couple games where LeBron James wasn't in the lineup. Without Luka, with Luka. And so, you know, this kind of points to me to kind of something a little larger than just kind of this trade or, right, you know, that JJ Redick, who, I mean, to be honest, I had a lot of doubts about, right? I mean, you look at kind of the Lakers, kind of the revolving door at the coach's office that they've had here since, you know, Phil Jackson left, right? It's just kind of every year or two, they're just kind of bringing in new guy. Guy doesn't work. You know, they've gone for these types of home run hires where they bring in these inexperienced guys and just kind of hoping it works and it doesn't. You know, this honestly, right, the whole process, it kind of felt like that, right? And so I was very skeptical. And you know, even the fact that, you know, Redick's kind of, right, the persona a little bit, you know, he kind of speaks the way, frankly, a lot of frauds do. So I was kind of like, okay, I've seen this act before, right? I've never haven't seen it really work too much. But the one thing is, again, the kind of consistent defensive effort, right? And yesterday, I thought, was a really good example about that, right? They were trailing the Knicks by double digits for a lot of the game. They kind of claw their way back in. They didn't shoot the ball great, right? Luka didn't have a great, great shooting night in particular. I mean, he did score the first 5 points in overtime. But to me, that was really a win. Again, that was just kind of, they just gutted it out, right? And you kind of saw there, you know, at the end of overtime when they kind of were protecting this slim lead, just the way that we're all over these guys, you know? So to me, that kind of points to, you know, you talk about like kind of culture and stuff, right? Especially football, you know, we've talked a lot about this, right? The Niners, right? The Rams, you know, the Chargers, how these, you know, the locker room culture kind of evolves over the course of a season. But you're kind of starting to feel that a little bit, right? With this Laker team that like, okay, everybody knows kind of what their role is. Okay, we got our shooters here, you know, the spacing and stuff, and then kind of the defensive rotations. So yeah, like the way they're playing right now, you know, the fact that they don't have kind of a dominant big man kind of leaves me with some questions, but hey, look, they've been looking great pretty much night in, night out. So, you know, and you got, you know, and we saw a couple games ago, the way once Luka just started kind of hitting those like circus shots, you start thinking like, man, if they're playing like this, like who's going to beat them?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great point, underlining JJ Redick, who nobody knew. We just didn't know. We didn't know if he could do it. Kind of reminds me of back-to-back Warriors coaches. And I mean, the comparison to Steve Kerr's been made, television booth, you know, solid NBA player, and kind of just, you know, throwing, this is what I believe in. This is what we're going to believe in. And, you know, almost like, hey, go ahead and fire me if you don't like me. Like, you know, guys who could afford to, like, this is how I'm doing. I'm not going to bend to this or that. We're going to do it this way, clearly with great, inheriting great all-time players and working with that player, working with just kind of the construct and redefining what it is. But also Mark Jackson. Another guy the Warriors plucked out of the broadcast. But they went back to back with that. And for a while I was joking, like, does Joe Lacob only hire for former TV people? Is you know, Marv Albert going to be the next coach? But Mark Jackson came in with that kind of attitude that I think that Redick has. Like, this, I got it. I got it figured out. I'm going to tell you I got it figured out. And you're stupid to think if I don't have it figured out. And Redick has that. I've seen it from him. That's okay. He's personable with it. So was Mark. But there's that backbone that I know how this was going to work. And anybody who doesn't follow me is stupid. And I think that's important too. Now, Mark Jackson did not get them to a championship. Steve Kerr did. But he set the baseline for it. So I think Redick's kind of crossing both. Like, he's kind of setting up this structure that Steve Kerr put over the top with the different offensive philosophy, but you got to get there. And then with LeBron, once you get there, you can, you know, and now with Luka, you can get all the way there. And, you know, they lucked into Luka, obviously. Here's a question. Does Nico Harrison get a championship ring if they win? He's as valuable as almost anybody on that team to the Lakers. It's just this, the structure, the confidence of it. Again, you can be confident and not get it right. That's the credit that Redick and Kerr, and I'll still keep giving Mark Jackson props for kind of setting things up in Golden State. But I just see to play this kind of defense with that personnel, which is not great defensive personnel. I mean, you take AD out of it for sure. And to continue to put up those numbers, it's very impressive. It tracks back to the scheme, to the dedication, to the commitment, to the coach. So full credit to that. The Warriors, meanwhile, like, you know, they're top five in net offense, net defense. Steph just went crazy on this road trip, like averaging 34, you know, 55% field goal from overall, 51% from three. Definitely looks freed up by Jimmy Butler. And I'll go back to a consistent theme I've made, and just some of the weird, you know, neurotic stuff you hear from Warriors fans or Warriors bloggers or other people that, oh, just give it up. They don't have a shot. Just forget about it. You're wasting all the Curry prime years. No, you continue to try to do the best when you have Curry, when you have LeBron. Now, obviously, LeBron and Luka, that's a whole different equation. But, like, this is what you try to do. Now, you might not make it as he gets older and as your core gets older, but you have to try. You have to keep going. You can't just blow it up as, oh, we're wasting the prime years, forget about it. Or you can't just be, you know, completely crass about prime years, prime years, prime years, just trade everything. No, you have to do it in a methodical, thoughtful way, and then go for it when you can. And then when
You know, and I think, right, you kind of don't want to, in some way, like, underestimate, kind of these all-time greats, right? Yes, I mean, they're that good for a reason, you know? And I think, you know, you again, the Lakers, I mean, when Luka came here, there were these questions, right? It's like, okay, LeBron's very ball dominant and Luka's very ball dominant. And how are they going to coexist? It's been, you know, hey, look, and I asked those questions myself, so I'm not going to pretend I wasn't part of that. But yeah, I mean, they're two great passers, right? And, you know, LeBron, he's just so smart, right? I mean, he, you know, if Luka wants to have the ball and, right, you know, burn down most of the shot clock, he doesn't mind just going to go stand in the corner over there, you know, and kind of find that right moment. Okay, maybe I need to kind of get open for an open three or something here. But he's been picking his spots like really smart, you know, and just kind of as I watch, you know, LeBron now compared to LeBron before Luka got into the lineup, you know, to me, it looks like this is like going to save his legs, right? I mean, you know, as it was, he was already playing really good defense. And that's one thing about, I think, this season that's really stood out about LeBron is how the effort he's been putting in defensively. You know, and now he doesn't have to kind of burn the candle on both ends, so to speak, right? He can kind of take plays off. And, you know, again, he's smart enough where he can get his 25, 30 points without like, it, like really just by kind of picking his spots right. This might not just keep him fresh for this season. I'm starting to kind of wonder, looking ahead, does this even extend his career by like another year or so, right? I mean, we're obviously getting to the end here, but it does feel like he's able to be more kind of efficient and kind of pick his spots a little bit more rather than just kind of carry the team like he has been for, you know, a better part of his tenure here.
Yeah, and if you just release early and Luka gets the defensive rebound, he's going to throw it to you for a layup. The Warriors are experiencing that with Butler. They do these wild downcourt passes and nobody catches it and they can't convert even if they do catch it. Jimmy Butler goes up. He is like they call him Megatron. Like he goes up and gets the ball in traffic and then he gathers and he puts the ball in the basket or gets fouled. And these are free points that the Warriors did not have. We're in fact throwing them away. The Lakers are getting these free points. It's just the wisdom of age and athletic, whatever it is, knowing where to put your body at the right time. And, you know, you get six extra points a game, you're going to win most games. If you just give an NBA team up, you're up 6-0 to start this game. And it might be more. This is playoff basketball also, too, by the way. Let's get back to it. I mean, I think the Lakers are a little bit shy. I think the Warriors are one player short. That might be Jonathan Kuminga when he comes back from injury. He has not yet come back. It's been a long time out. We'll have to see. Probably not that guy, but we'll see. There's a chance at it. I think the Lakers got their shot, and I don't think they match up great, let's say, with Boston or with Cleveland, so I don't know to the end, but you get to that round, we'll see. And Dallas got there before with a team that was maybe similar to the Lakers right now last year with Luka. Maybe the Lakers are a little bit better than that Dallas team overall, but Luka kind of dragged them there. I think they got a shot at it. Now, OKC is sitting there going, yeah, great. Everybody's not talking about us. So look at what we got. And there's no question. They are a great team, like what, 52-10. But I think they would be a little leery of both these teams. I would not favor the Warriors over OKC. The Lakers, I might put right about even money because Luka's beat Oklahoma City before. He beat them last year. How would you scale that one there with the Lakers and Warriors title chances?
Yeah, again, just these are guys that have done it before, right? And I do think that matters. You know, I mean, like you said, Oklahoma City, maybe this is the year for them, right? Maybe this is the year that they kind of finally break through, whatever. But, you know, until they do that, like, I'm going to like the experience a lot of times, right? And, you know, we saw a couple years ago when, you know, the Lakers got into, like, the play-in tournament and they're playing Memphis, right, with Morant, and they were playing really well and had a great regular season, and the Lakers took them down, right? You can kind of just by being smart, I think, right? You know, you kind of talk about like the kind of those little 6-point margins, a basket here, a basket there. Next thing you know, you're kind of off to the races. So, you know, I don't know necessarily if I'm like, I'm going to say like, well, you know, this team is going to make it there for sure. But like you said, right, I don't think if you're one of these younger teams, I don't think that this is a team that you want to face.
No, right? I think if you had a ranked team of the West right now, most likely to get through, you go, okay, see one. Lakers 2, Warriors 3, you know, and that's Memphis and Houston and Denver's tough. The Denver would be tough for the Warriors. I don't know if it'd be tough for the Lakers given what we just saw there, but like Denver, you got to put in that mix, but it's those four teams and, you know, the Lakers to be there amazing. If you ask me, just given some of their weaknesses, I do not love Jackson Hayes at center. They don't have a defensive stopper. So, you know, listen, SGA could go off on him, and the Warriors have the same thing. They have some defensive weaknesses, and there's times their offense can bog down. But you don't bet against the greats. And the Lakers got two of them, and the Warriors got two of them, thanks to trades at the deadline. This is going to make the playoffs fascinating. And I think we're calling it Warriors-Lakers playoff round at some point, and that will be fascinating to watch. Good for the North and South podcast. Everything that happens should be good for the North and South podcast. That's all I got to say. All right, let's go. We are the Shohei Ohtani Dodgers podcast. So Ohtani basically not any more bullpens. What's happening there? Is there a chance that this thing kind of continues into the season? He's not going to be pitched that much?
I think the start of the season was always kind of in question mark, right? When is he going to start, like, as a pitcher? I think from a very early stage, they were clear he's not pitching in Tokyo. What the team is claiming right now is like, hey, look, you know, he's kind of ramping up as a hitter to kind of get ready for opening day. So let's just kind of slow the throwing down. Not really sure I buy that.
That doesn't sound like Ohtani, right?
Because Ohtani is just kind of, I mean, during the playoffs, he was like throwing and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. He did not slow down, kind of like the pitching rehab. Obviously, he didn't get to face hitter, you know, which was evidently kind of in the plans initially, right? In October, if they hadn't made the playoffs or something, or they'd been knocked out early, I think the plan sim game. So they did kind of cut that stuff back. But the fact that he's not even going off the mound right now, you know, my guess is that it's probably something relatively minor, like dead arm or something, right? And, you know, that if this were kind of a normal kind of spring training, you probably just kind of push through it. The fact, though, that the team is also kind of insisting that he's fine, right? If there's like a real problem here, I'm not really sure they're coming out and, you know, hey, nothing to see here either, right? Because we're going to find out in a few weeks, and then they're going to look stupid. So my guess is, again, it's just that there's probably something kind of minor there going on. I'm not really sure how much of this is actually going to affect things. You know, I mean, now, you know, the team does go to Japan next week, right? We'll be in Japan next week for opening day. So that's coming up kind of quick. So the schedule is a little bit different, and then they're going to come back for a couple of weeks and be off, and then they'll have like kind of the domestic opener. My guess is that it's more just kind of scheduling type of stuff. I don't really think there's any reason to be particularly alarmed yet, but, you know, definitely something worth keeping an eye on, because sometimes you don't know, right? Sometimes little things do flare up into becoming larger problems.
My suspicion was they don't need him. We know they don't need him pitching right away. Certainly won't pitch him in the Japan series. Then there's another couple weeks, and then the season starts, and you don't necessarily need even if you go six-man rotation, there's so many off days built in. You don't need six actual starters. You just have build the off day in, and then you get 5 days off between starts anyway. Maybe he doesn't start throwing, you know, pitching for them for sure till late April, maybe mid-May. Like, then that was kind of what they got all these guys. Like, if they're all or mostly healthy, then is Kershaw even on the team yet? What's going on there?
He's not on the active roster. Okay. So he showed up back. So he signed his contract, disappeared, right? So the day that he talked to us, he already had his roller bag ready to fly back to Dallas. Mm-hmm. I think he reemerged in camp again because he wants to go to Japan.
Okay.
It feels like he's going more as a tourist at this point. He's on the 60-day IL. He did tell me, like, well, I want to see what it's like to be in Japan with Ohtani there, which, you know, kind of come to think of it, is kind of an interesting thing.
Well, that's why you're going to pitch as much as Kershaw, I think, too.
Right. Yeah. He's been off the mound maybe a couple times at this point. But again, he's still, I think, a ways away. Right. Mm-hmm. But like you said, they have a ton of guys. Right. I mean, you know, between that group of Dustin May, Tony Gonsolin, Bobby Miller. Two of those guys aren't going to make the starting, opening day rotation, right? Those are two guys that, you know, on probably most teams might be number two starters, number three starters. So like you said, they got a lot of pitching. And I think everything is kind of, you know, especially with Ohtani, everything is geared towards October. Right. Yeah. On the pitching end. So as long as he's, I think the goal is going to be to kind of keep him fresh for the playoffs. You know, and who knows what that means in terms of how much he actually pitches this season.
What you don't want is him to blow out his arm, and then that takes him out of hitting. That's what, like, that would be the worst and stupidest thing they could do, because they've already won the World Series with him not pitching because he hits so good. So that, like, that happens, I'll go, Dodgers, you screwed up. You need this guy playing, period. So is that next week? Japan's next week?
Yeah, the team is leaving, I think, the U.S. on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. The games are the following week, the 18th and the 19th. Okay. In Japan, you know, they're 16 hours ahead. So they'll have about a week over there. They're going to play a couple of exhibition games first. But, yeah, it's going to be crazy. You know, I don't think, you know, and I'm not sure, you know, how many of our listeners have gone to sporting events kind of overseas and stuff. But, you know, not soccer countries are obviously a little bit different. Right. That is like religion, you know, kind of like with us here. And you pay for that experience, I guess. Yeah. But, you know, like you go to like a lot of kind of advanced countries where sports are kind of part of the fabric, but not like dominant, you know, tickets tend to be pretty cheap, right? You go to, you know, you go to most ballparks in Japan, like the food is really cheap. If anything, the American in me is always looking around Japanese ballparks like, why don't they have more food stands? Like, right? Every inch of an American ballpark is designed to take money out of your wallet. And it's not quite like that over there. The tickets aren't that bad. These tickets now on the resale, you know, the secondary market are going for over $1,000. So they, this has kicked them into, you know, kind of our postmodern capitalism, whatever, late stage capitalism or whatever you want to call it. So yeah, they've kind of reached our level of hysteria, I guess, you know, when it comes to sports, just by, you know, you look at those ticket prices again, it seems pretty crazy.
Well, we might have another podcast before then, but if that's the next one, we'll call this the North and South and Far East podcast. So, long way to go for me on that one, but I was setting it up the whole time. We got to say, Dave Roberts looks like he is finally going to get his new deal. This is last year. I mean, it would have been weird for him to be a lame duck after winning a second World Series. Any news on that? Any observations? It just seems natural. Is he going to reset the manager market here?
Yes and no. You know, I think at least our understanding kind of in recent weeks was that the talks were kind of centered around like a 4-year deal, right? That he was going to have to kind of give up on the years, right? I think Council got a 5-year deal, right? Like $8 million per. You know, I think there were some reports out yesterday, I think from, who was it? John Heyman, I think at the New York Post reported that, you know, he's going to set a new AAV record. Again, our understanding is that he's not going to get the years. So, you know, my guess is that it probably ends up at 4 and 35 or somewhere in that range, right? Where he will get kind of the salary, but not quite the years. And that is kind of interesting, right? Because I do think the, you know, a lot of these analytic teams, again, right, kind of treat the manager as like, hey, you're just here to basically kind of carry out our plan. The Dodgers, right, this has been an interesting situation because of the market they're in, the number of star players they have, the managing of the egos. You know, on one hand, you could say like, hey, like Tim, like you and I could go out and manage this.
Well,
team, right?
I know GMs who would say that. Not you and me particularly, but anybody.
Yeah. But, you know, you also kind of don't want to take that chance either. Right. There were various points, you know, over the last several seasons where I kind of thought like, oh, it's just going to be like the powder keg that finally blows this whole thing up. Right. You know, where again, I go back to that Mookie Betts thing last year. Right. Mm-hmm. He's been playing shortstop. He gets hurt. He comes back. Plan is for him to come back as a shortstop, and they kind of talk him into going back into right field, you know, and that I was honestly kind of looking at that situation. I kind of saw it coming ahead thinking like, okay, we're going to have like our first kind of controversy here in a while. And the fact that, you know, it was like no news at all, right? Mookie just kind of agreed to go back and under this thing that like, okay, well, we'll give it a shot next year. I guess all that was kind of discussed at that point. But that requires a certain amount of skill, right? You know, that obviously we've seen in various teams, you know, teams have blown up over smaller things than that. So I do think while the front office might not necessarily value the manager that much, you also kind of don't want to, you know, take any chances.
Yeah.
Right?
And in the context
that much money.
Yeah. When in context of their payroll, you know, this is 1% of the payroll, whatever it is, at least 1% of Ohtani's larger deal. Why mess around with that? Like, even if you suspect that it isn't that big a difference, why even mess around with it? It's not like you're putting $50 million into this. That's like, I do think major corporations and major teams get screwed up with that. saying, ah, you know what? We're paying this, you know, we're paying $300 million for the payroll. So let's cut it down on the manager that we know can do it. No, you know, we can do it. So you just got to go with, you pay what it takes. It isn't a killer. It would be ridiculous. What, you can put Gabe Kapler in there to be the manager. I mean, you know, Bob Guerin, I've been around those guys, and maybe you don't want to do that. So, you know, and I have seen teams who do that because they don't think the manager is very important. And that just seems to be a little self-defeating. Let's continue on the LA stuff. We'll get into some 49ers things on this too, but it's contractual. It's contract time in the NFL. It's teams reassessing what they're going to do with their cap, or what they're going to do with free agency. They're looking at the draft. The Rams had a little drama with Matthew Stafford, which I guess they had last year in a more quiet way. But he was allowed to go seek a trade. There were teams interested in him, or were going to pay him higher than what the rate was going to be. And he decides to come back to the Rams at a different rate. I'm not sure that's been reported what the terms are. I imagine it's higher than, you know, what he was going to, like, get 41 or 42. And there's tons of quarterbacks making 50. We can get back to the 50 number, by the way, with the 49ers. How do you view all that happening with Stafford coming back to the Rams?
Yeah, to me, it was just kind of, it made the most sense, right? I think for both sides. I think, you know, McVay, obviously, I heard like last year was the guy that kind of pushed to get the thing done, right? When I think management kind of didn't, you know, feel great about that situation, you know. And my guess is, again, knowing the Rams, I'm guessing they knocked on a lot of doors, made a lot of phone calls in terms of like what their other options were. It's a franchise that swings big. You know, but assuming that, right, you know, given that none of those things obviously materialized, like Stafford was their best option, you know, and this is, right, we talked about this last week before the deal got done. It just made sense for him, right? This is an organization that does smart things. They don't, like, mess things like this up. And I think, you know, they weren't going to let kind of whatever their feelings were about it kind of get in the way of doing what was best for the franchise. And so I think it made sense for them. And I think it made sense for Stafford too, right? I mean, this is a guy who asked his way out of Detroit because he couldn't win there. It's like, hey, let me go get a chance to win. And it wouldn't have made sense for me to now for him to put himself in a much, much more difficult situation here, you know? And so I think kind of both sides get what they want here. To me, it kind of makes sense. And, you know, you look at the Rams now and kind of think, okay, well, you know, again, they were competitive last year. They should be competitive again this year with Stafford there.
Yeah. I mean, and as we keep saying, like they played the toughest game against the Eagles in the playoffs, could beat them. And that's pretty, and Matthew Stafford was the reason why, and a large reason. A lot of young defensive players, all those things. It's a similar thing. Like, you know, certainly the reporting was that if Stafford had been traded, they would have gone to Aaron Rodgers. You're sure that's better than, or even close? Even if you get Rodgers for $25 million, you know, half of what it would cost. Yes, Stafford probably would cost more than that, but let's say that's what it was. You sure? You sure that's better? It's probably not. And what does that do to your locker room? What kind of message does it send everybody? It certainly did not help the Jets at any point. He was there for several years. At some point, you just got to do what you know is best for you. And I'll take that to the 49ers and Brock Purdy. A lot of reporting. I've been doing a lot of it. Mike Silver come in with a really nice piece today in The Athletic. There is a recalibration of the 49ers. They've given up a lot of big money to a lot of players, really good players, but they went 6-11 last year. These good players were not great. And there is regret over the terms of these deals. They've traded Deebo Samuel. They clearly are talking about trading Brandon Ayuk, which I think would be incredibly self-defeating. It would be $50 million in dead cap for two receivers you don't have. I sense some of this is just them holding a grudge and kind of wanting it public. Whatever, you do. But I don't think this should bleed over to screw up their Purdy negotiations. And it might. We'll see. It's a team that does not want to get beat on this deal. Fine. I don't want to get beat on deals either. You want to negotiate hard, but the quarterback's the thing you can't screw up. And the one thing about the Rams, they got the Stafford deal done now. You kind of had to with free agency, but you get it done now. Don't wait till June, till July, when he's missing mini camp and OTAs and might be missing training camp. I think that's where they run into trouble. Now with Ayuk, I don't think Ayuk was coming in for training camp. He just, and that's part of the bitterness. They think he just played it out to try to get the social media views and to try to, you know, it just wasn't a real negotiation. I think with Purdy, there will be one, or at least they should try to have one and see if they can get this done by the draft or right after the draft. I don't think they will, but they should try. And it's like, what are you going to do that's better? Like, Aaron Rodgers going to come here? I don't think that would do well in the locker room. Are you going to, how, How are you going to replace Brock Purdy, 25-year-old quarterback who fits perfectly with a coach? But there is some reaction. I just, like you said, that like the Rams maybe did it because McVay was really pressuring for it last year. I think Shanahan and John Lynch have pressured for these deals to come in. Ayuk last year, Nick Bosa the year before. You know, there's been, you know, Debo, there's been Trent Williams extension, Christian McCaffrey. Just get, you got to get these guys in because we got to win a Super Bowl. Get these guys in, we got to win a Super Bowl. I get it. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think that influence is on the decline, certainly after 6-11. And they were the ones who would say, we got to get Purdy in. We got to get him in. If it costs an extra $5 million a year, let's do it. I don't know if that will be received as well. In fact, that might not be received well at all. But we'll see. We've got the next few months to see. It's negotiations, as I always say. You start low and you get to the middle. But the quarterback's the one you don't necessarily want to do that with. You don't want that stretching through training camp. You basically are going to blow up the season if you do. So this thing could get really interesting really fast.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
You want to get the most for your money. That's why more Mazda buyers choose Ramsey Mazda. Lease a new 2025 Mazda CX-50 all-wheel drive, only $249 a month. Or buy and get 0.9% APR financing for 36 months. Start shopping now at RamseyMazda.com. Choose wisely. Choose Ramsey Mazda.
Call 833-853-2970 for details. Excludes tax, title, and registration. Zero security deposit. VIN SN316458. MSRP 32295 and 331-25.
You know, my question to you, I guess, is, right, when you, how much of, like, the investment in Purdy is viewed as an investment, like, kind of on the roster as a whole, right, the whole program that they have going right now? You know, say, take, like, Justin Herbert, right? Kind of doesn't matter who's coaching him, doesn't matter what the team around him looks like. It's like, okay, give him whatever you need to kind of keep him here long term, because if we fire everybody and trade the whole team, that's the one guy that's going to be here and we're going to kind of build around him. So it makes sense, right, to just back up the Brinks truck and let the guy, you know, take as much money out of the thing that he can. With Purdy, how much of this is kind of tied to, you know what I mean, like the Shanahan?
No, it's
current roster.
That he's got talent around him that he can maximize, right, but he can't quite do it by himself. Yeah, that's all part of the equation. But quarterbacks like that still get paid too. Like they get paid. Kirk Cousins got paid. I think Purdy's kind of a Kirk Cousins level, maybe slightly better, you know, over the long term, maybe slightly worse, but Kirk Cousins has been paid great money over the years. That is the discussion. Like if Purdy, yeah, go, you know, if he went out there and tried to get a deal on his own, what would the number be? I don't know, because it would be specific to a system, to a style. You'd have to have some receivers who can make some plays. He's not going to kill you downfield all the time, although he does throw the ball downfield. It's really specific to Shanahan, but that's part of the, like, it's hard to find a quarterback like that to fit Shanahan. If you're committed to Shanahan, that is a good point. Like if they do not do this deal with Purdy, if they do not do it, that would be a tell about what they're thinking about the Shanahan system long-term. I don't think he's getting fired, but if you go 7-10 this year after going 6-11, there would be some question marks. I think Purdy's the quarterback you bet with. Last time they tried to get a quarterback, they traded 3 first round picks to get Trey Lance. Like you just can't say, well, let's go get it. We got another quarterback right here. You know, Sam Darnold, you're going to pay him $40 million a year. I think Purdy's better. Like there's like a baseline of what you need from a quarterback and Purdy passes it. And that means he's worth $48, $51, $52, $53 million. I said Jalen Hurts is a guy I've compared him to. You would not say the guy is a classic quarterback. He's not Justin Herbert. He's not Joe Burrow. He wins games. He wins games in a lot of different ways. I think Purdy's similar to that. I've really compared them a lot. And Hurts didn't break the bank when he signed his new deal a couple years ago, but he's in a 51. I think Purdy should be right there. And if you don't do it, you're telling him you don't believe that he's the guy, and you're telling Kyle Shanahan you're not sure about his system. And that's a lot to say. That's a lot to say right now. With a team that was in the Super Bowl last year, not this previous year, but the year before that, that has a lot of great players. You can tell Fred Warner we don't believe what's going on right now. You can tell George Kittle that. You can tell Christian McCaffrey that. That's the line they're treading. That's the negotiations they're in. I just think the lean early is going to be tougher than maybe we expected on the negotiations, and then we'll see where they get. And I would say, man, if they're getting to mid-May and there's nothing or there's leaks that there's a problem, they keep saying that, you know, he's on a contract already. He's got a contract for this year. That's what you say when you're throwing down a hard line. And that would be problematic for the season. And maybe the 49ers top execs are ready to throw away a season. I don't think they should be. I don't think Kyle Shanahan wants to throw away a season. I don't think John Lynch does. I don't think the locker room does. So it's going to be a fascinating play out. The 49ers have kind of brandished the saber before and, you know, met in the middle generally. We'll see if they do it this time. The early signs are they don't want to, though, and that the negotiators have the clout right now more than Shanahan Lynch is just saying, let's get him in. Let's just get him in. I don't think that is going to win the day. It's going to have to be more practical than that.
Now, is this just kind of York's call at this point?
Yeah, it's always I mean, it's York and Parag Marate. It's Parag Marate, the chief negotiator. That's the guy, and has risen, you know, and fallen in power, but has always been close to Jed and is kind of the monitor of the money. So it makes him very important. And obviously, he's the guy who's running their, you know, European soccer investments, and that's a very big deal for them. But now he runs these negotiations. He is a tough negotiator, which is to his credit, but I think he feels like he's lost a few and doesn't blame himself. He blames Shanahan and Lynch for, you know, pushing them. And listen, you sign the deals, you sign the deals. You can't blame everyone else. You sign the deals. It was to push to win a Super Bowl, and they did not win a Super Bowl. So I think it's Parag Marate's kind of gut reaction is to do it this way. And at this moment, Jed decides which way they lean. And at this moment, we're holding the line. We're going to kind of reset some things after we paid too much. You know, obviously Debo being traded, obviously Brandon Ayuk being on the trade market. I think it's self-destructive to take these huge cap hits because you don't like the deals. You sign the deals. Why don't you live with some of them? But that is certainly the mentality. That's the in the atmosphere right now. And I felt it for sure. I felt it from the end of last year. They felt they made some mistakes. But they got a really talented team. You should try to win a Super Bowl. As it goes back to the Warriors-Lakers thing. Like you don't have a ton of chances to do this. Christian McCaffrey is not going to be great for a lot more years. Fred Warner, George Kittle, whatever. You don't throw away years. And if they screw around with Purdy, man, that would be a sign of a lot of things. And possibly just blowing up a 2025 when the Super Bowl is at Levi Stadium, by the way, Dylan Hernandez, you know, that might get a little ugly for them if they screw that season up. But maybe they're saying, we're trying to do what's best for the team, and we get Purdy in for a real good deal, we can get other players in, and we have an even better chance to win the Super Bowl. That's the other reasoning. And I understand that they're going to pay to the cap. They're going to pay cash. It's not like they're going to cheap out. It's just the manner of which they're going to do it.
Yeah, I always find these situations like fascinating, right? Because, you know, in any sports franchise, right, there's kind of the tension between kind of the ownership slash business people and then the people that are actually like in charge of like running the team, right? The, you know, in this case, the football people, or if it's a baseball team, the baseball people. And, you know, ownership ultimately, right? I mean, because it really sounds like they have to make the determination, like, can we win the Super Bowl?
Yep.
Right. And that's going to inform them, how far are we willing to go? How much are we willing to spend? How much are we willing to pay this guy? But they kind of lack that expertise, right? I mean, obviously, you know, they didn't play professional football, you know. And so, you know, where I find like the organizations where it works kind of the best is when you kind of have people that can kind of bridge that and kind of speak both languages, right? They kind of, you know, Andrew Friedman, for, you know, whatever I've criticized him, the one thing is he does speak like Mark Walter's language, right? He speaks the language of investment bankers, and he knows how to kind of communicate this in ways that make it digestible for him. This is kind of an interesting one, like, especially if you, like you're saying, right? If the Shanahan Lynch thing is kind of starting to lose a little bit of influence, now all of a sudden it kind of feels like you got two sides here, right? And
that was it, which is similar to the Harbaugh, by the way. Yeah, right. But what I wrote today is that John Lynch is the key guy. And I don't know if he's Andrew Friedman. He can't quite talk investment banking and all those things, but he's such a connector. He's such a people person. He's such a relationships guy. Now, he's part of the pushing them to sign some of these deals, I'm pretty sure. So maybe he's lost some luster in there financially, but he can go, okay, let's get a compromise here. Let's figure out what the compromise is. We still want to win a Super Bowl. We still have this great locker room. Kyle can't really do it. Coaches can't do it. They're too focused on the next day and the next film and the next play. And they run hot. Coaches run hot. We know that. And I think it's up to other executives. And I think John Lynch is the guy. He's very connected to Kyle. What blew up the Harbaugh thing more than anything was that Trent Baalke was against them. And that is not the case here. You know, John Lynch is in it with Kyle Shanahan. He does not imagine a life for the 49ers after Kyle Shanahan. Trent Baalke very much did that with Jim Harbaugh. Jed Yarp did at some point. And that does not exist here. So John Lynch, I think, is on the spot. This is his offseason. Like, figure this all out. Find compromises between the Jed Parag side and the Kyle, you know, Lynch football side. And there are there. Like, you can see it. We can all see what the compromises are. Can they do it? Can they convince the players to do it? Can they field a Super Bowl level roster by doing it? That's up to John Lynch. You know, I just noticed when you said to Andrew Friedman that, yeah, that would be really important for the 49ers to have. And it's John Lynch if he can do it. And if he can't do it, and if they lose players because of this, or they screw up the Purdy thing, or somehow there's just a total crisis of confidence in everybody, and then they have a bad season, then they're going to redo it. And I don't think they want to. Like, then you start going this whole, like, Chip Kelly again? You know, like, you don't want to do that. Practical mind should come. You know, they've been a good administration. This has been a really good era. They just haven't won a Super Bowl. And I do get that. That's a difference. But do you want to, like, you know, go back to a time when you don't know how good you are and when players don't want to come here? That's where they are. And I think we're feeling it. Everybody who talks to people around the 49ers is feeling this. I think the players are feeling this. And this is the stuff that's coming out now. All right, Dylan, I think that's it. We went through a lot there. So
yeah, we did.
We'll come back. I think we'll do another one next week before you go to Japan. But then we'll do one more in Japan. Maybe, if you can do it.
Well, I'm leaving pretty early in the week. I think I leave.
Okay, really? Okay, well, we'll do one. Well, maybe next one we'll do one in Japan. Well, good. That'll be good, because then I go on vacation after that. So okay. We'll do the Japan one. Everyone to look forward to Dylan from Japan eating this cheap food that he's bragging about. So all good. Get some good dining. Well, I want to hear all about it. All right, everybody. That's the show for today.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Guys, by now you've heard me talk about Collars & Co., makers of the dress collar polo. They've already sold over a million of these amazing shirts. Well, Collars & Co. just came out with the new Maverick Performance Blazer. This blazer is sharp and wrinkle resistant, so you can travel anywhere with it. Just throw it in your bag and it will remain wrinkle free. It even comes with security zip pockets, a sunglasses loop, and an optional pocket square. So visit collarsandco.com and use code TIKI for 20% off at collarsandco.com.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
One night, one goal, stop suicide. On June 21st, New York City will host the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's milestone 30th Out of the Darkness Overnight Walk. Join thousands as we journey over 16 miles from dusk till dawn for a night of healing and hope while raising much-needed funds and awareness for this important cause. Register today at theovernight.org or call 888-THE-OVERNIGHT, 888-843-6837.